That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
Welcome to episode 166 of That Great Business Show, home of great business tips, insights, and opportunities on every episode delivered in our commute-friendly package. And all thanks to daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. If you are looking for your first home or looking to upsize or downsize your abode, make sure you visit daft.ie to find that next place you call home. I am Conal O'Moran, Foiltister. As we often say, we're always trying to save your business money, especially as you struggle to grow. On this episode, we have found you a nice little fix, especially if you thought you couldn't afford a top-tier marketeer. Stay listening to find out how you can. And we have more on our Beachhead USA mini-series coming up. We've drawn up the ultimate crib sheet for anyone setting up a business in the US. On this episode, we explain why you need to spend a minimum of $1 million a year to establish your US business and why you should not try to do it on the cheap. We have info about a new Irish American Angel Fund who might be a source of investment for your business. And if you have college kids who want to go to the States for their summer, we have some top advice on the American way to get the best jobs available whilst there on a J1. You're welcome.
If it's for sale, it's on daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. Whether you're looking for your first home or planning your next move, make sure you're on daft.ie, the best place to buy or sell in Ireland.
Travel to Connecticut, USA with Aer Lingus service to Bradley International Airport. With the daily flights from Dublin to Hartford, we make business travel to Connecticut easy. Save time with US pre-clearance, enjoy Aer Lingus award-winning flight service, and experience the convenience of Bradley International Airport, perfectly situated for your travel needs. Learn more and plan your next business trip at aerlingus.com.
Now, it may sound like something from the old Soviet Union, but the Fractional Marketing Collective is a new business, and it's going to save your business money. So we like. It's brought to you by the same people who bring you the Indie List. That is the listing business where a very large number of creatives are available to you to work on your projects. One of those behind the Indie List is my former Today FM boss and one of the all-time nice guys from the advertising industry, Peter McPartlin, and is here to tell us why he's going all Soviet style. Peter McPartlin, welcome to That Great Business Show.
That's a fantastic intro, yeah. I'm not sure about the Soviet connection, particularly in the times that we live in nowadays, but...
Fractional Marketing Collective.
Well, absolutely. Well, look, it's not a name that we coined ourselves. It's an emerging trend that we're seeing in the freelance, professional freelance talent market coming naturally from the States, not from the Soviet Union, you'd be glad to hear. And it's something that we're beginning to see emerge in the Irish market as well. Let me just tell you a little bit about fractional marketing. I might wind the clock back and talk about the Indie List in a couple of minutes, but a fractional CMO, so chief marketing officer, for those businesses who don't call them chief marketing officers, but maybe head of marketing or senior marketeer, they're effectively people who work with businesses for a fixed amount of time, maybe a couple of hours a week, a couple of hours a month, or a couple of days a month. And in other words, they dedicate a fraction of their time that a regular head of marketing might, if you're hiring somebody full-time, might devote, and they do it for a fraction of the cost of doing that. If I can, again, maybe wind back the clock as to how we arrived at this fractional marketeer collective. What we've found since we launched the Indie List is that there are a lot of Irish businesses, and particularly Irish business, I'll exclude the international ones for the moment, but a lot of Irish businesses that have real ambition around marketing. They have brilliant products, brilliant services, but perhaps lacked the talent at a really senior level to guide the strategy to bring them to market or to make the next progression in terms of the market. So marketing expertise and vision that's needed, particularly for businesses, and I'm talking here now beyond communications. So this is not about advertising or doing your next digital campaign. This is working on a marketing strategy that embraces a whole range of things. And it's getting access to those type of people. First of all, being able to afford them, which a lot of businesses, particularly startups, can't. And what we've tried to do with this collective is to make it much more affordable for companies, whether they're startups, existing companies, small, medium or large, it doesn't really matter. Everybody's in need of really good marketing expertise. And to make it affordable for those businesses to hire the best people.
And am I right in saying that the success of the Indie List actually took you by surprise?
Big time. Big time. Yeah, look, we make no bones about it. My business partner, Una Herlihy, who's based in Kilkenny, we set
who
this
was
up.
On the podcast previously?
She absolutely was, yeah. And thank you again for inviting us.
We want to have her types on.
Yeah, well, the Indie List, we started the Indie List during the first COVID lockdown. So when that hit, as we all know, so many people, so many businesses were affected because of lockdown, and none more so than freelance people. So people without the security of full-time work and, you know, all of the benefits that go with that. So a lot of people that we would have worked with in the advertising, marketing, communications business, people who do creative work, people look after projects, people who do digital work and so on, effectively their livelihoods fell off a cliff, like, again, a lot of other industries and a lot of other sectors. So as we weren't frontline workers in the medical sense, we said, look, what can we do during that COVID situation? And Una had come up with the idea of creating a list of people who are available for work, broadcasting that, if you like, through social media like LinkedIn, asked me to get involved. And out of that, because of the reaction we got from freelancers primarily, we said, let's double down on it and create a business. Now, we hadn't a bull's notion about the nature of freelance platforms, organizations, people like Fiverr and Upwork and all those big companies that have millions of freelancers all over the globe. We had no notion how they worked. We just said, look, it's a worthwhile initiative. Let's double down on it, see how it goes. And we just got an enormous reaction. Great goodwill from communications agencies, great support from SMBs, great support from large corporates. People like the National Lottery came on board and lots of other corporates as well to hire people for their own needs during that time. And out of that, you know, as a completely accidental business, we set it up as a proper company. We launched it on the 4th of July, 2020. To coincide naturally with Independence Day, and it's been going like a rocket ever since.
How many have you got on the platform?
We have now just over 1,500 people.
That's fantastic, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. So it's a
had you any idea?
No idea.
When you started off, did you think you might have 200 or 100 or how many?
We thought if we got to 500 people, we said there's probably no more than that in the kind of creative communications business.
My next question, how many are there?
We reckon now that there's probably professional freelancers, so people who earn most of their living out of freelancing, you know, choosing the type of way that they want to work, choosing the type of projects they want to work on. We reckon there's probably about 3,500.
So you've got a bit more to go?
We have a bit more to go, yeah. And particularly in this new area of, if you like, the kind of senior executive freelancer market, who maybe sometimes would call themselves consultants. And I'll talk about the difference between a consultant and a fractional marketeer in a second.
Please do.
Well, I suppose a consultant, and again, all professional people in their own right, consultants generally work from the outside in. Fractional marketeers working from the inside out. So they're working hand in hand, whether day in, day out, or a couple of hours a week, internally in the company, working on the day-to-day business of managing the strategy for the company. Consultants tend to parachute in, give a view, and parachute back out again. And that's no disrespect to them. They are both professional in their approach, but maybe the costs are a little bit different.
But I presume that you're going to find a pushback on a couple of things. For example, commitment. If I'm committed to half a day here, half a day there, my eye isn't on the ball all of the time.
But you're only going to get paid for the work that you do. You're only going to get paid also on the outputs that you deliver. And all of the people, we have 40 people now who are part of this marketeer collective. They all come with very big endorsement. They have had brilliant experience across large corporates, small, medium enterprises, in some cases running their own companies. They've run agencies. They've worked on different sectors across business. They are there to produce results. They're not there to kind of sell you on the next widget or the next ad campaign or the next piece of digital communication. They are there to work on the strategy of the business as opposed to get down dirty into the weeds. We have lots of people who can do the implementation bit, but people working on the strategy is really, really key.
So how should somebody in business use your service? Let's say we're in widgets. Why not?
Yes.
And I need a strategy about selling my widgets. How best should I approach the indie list and or the your collective? I love the idea of the collective.
Sure. Well, look, I suppose determining, first of all, what exactly you need, what's the type of skill that you need at a strategic level. And again, we've a range of experts. As I say, we've 40 different people, all with different individual specialisms. I think the first thing that certainly that we would recommend is that the company, before they decide to take on a fractional CMO, or before they decide to take even decide what type of fractional individual that they need, is to do a marketing audit. And that's a pretty straightforward process. We've, in fact, what we've created now are three different types of marketing audit packages. So to make it affordable for startup companies, to make it affordable for corporates who basically need to bring somebody in to take an independent view on their marketing investment and where it's going. So we've created that kind of marketing audit package. And what that would do is to allow company to kind of take a step back, bring in somebody who'll do it independently, look at the strengths and weaknesses of the business from a marketing point of view, look at the team, look at the resources, look at the budget, and then help the owner of the business decide this is the way in which you need to progress or to allow the business to progress and hit those goals that you've set at the start of the year.
And down at the bottom end, how much money is involved, say, in your initial audit for the most basic package, just to give an idea?
For the most basic package, I mean, let me again wind back the clock and talk about hiring a CMO or a marketeer or a senior marketeer. And the last study I've seen this year of salaries for marketing directors starting at $120,000 a year, rising to over 200,000, and that's without benefits. So what we're talking about for a fractional marketeer is starting at around 750 a day and rising maybe to 1500 a day. But the marketing audit bit, you can do a really decent marketing audit for about 6,000 euro. And what that will do is that will give you a really good assessment of where the business is at from a marketing perspective, review the team, review the market, review the opportunities that the business maybe has identified as to whether they're practical or not, and then set out a range of actions. So this is very much action orientated as opposed to a nice thing to do, you know.
So I am a widget maker. I am not a marketeer. How do I choose my marketeer? Who's right for me or who the right person is?
So any business and generally the way in which we work as the indie list, we will get an outline brief, if you like, from a particular client, and no different in this case. So get an understanding from the client as to where they feel their weakness might be or where the area that they want to focus in on might be. So again, we have a range of experts. It could be digital transformation. It could be brand strategy. It could be content creation. It could be performance marketing, innovation. It could be talent. So if the business owner has a good perspective on where their problem area might be, we can identify within our list of 40 people which ones to introduce. And then he or she, as the business owner, will choose to work with any of those. So,
but the problem might be is that the business owner doesn't know where the weakness is.
Well, again, what...
Houston, we have a problem.
Houston, we have a problem. Well, again, we can help in that regard. And that's where, again, we have a couple of general marketeers as well, people who can work across different sectors, different disciplines. And I think he or she would be able to identify with the business owner where the exact focus, the future focus should be from a marketing perspective.
And I don't know the answer to this. Have you gone abroad with this? Are people using the Indie List for overseas assignments?
Primarily in Ireland.
But have you got, I'm looking deep into your eyes now because I think I saw a glint of something. Is there, have you got plans, ambitions?
Well, I mean, a market that you often talk about that I hear in the podcast is kind of nearly on our doorstep. You don't have to go too far and realize there's a million people north of the border. So look, we haven't focused too much beyond the 26 counties.
Because our creatives are as good as, if not
absolutely
better.
Yeah. And in fact, one of our best creatives, it's a guy who designed the original Indie List website and brand identity, Chris Byers. Don't mind giving him a shout out. On the podcast, Connell, and he's based in Belfast, but he tells us all the time, you guys need to come up here. There's some brilliant, brilliant creative people, marketing people, digital people in the north, and a number of them are on a list, but we just feel that there's an opportunity there waiting to be tapped into. So maybe 2024 is going to be that year.
I'll tell you two things about that. Martin Nocton, the very, very famous business person, he always said his first overseas, or not overseas, his first export market was into Northern Ireland. And he has built a zillion-dollar business out of that, and with Glendimplex. The second thing is I have made contact with the Northern Ireland food producers, and I have what is possibly the best, I'm not going to name him, but possibly the best brand name I've ever come across. He has agreed, the person behind it has agreed to come on. So that'll probably be into the new year. But I just think there's some fantastic businesses up in Northern Ireland. We also had Deli Lights on.
That's right. We've actually worked with Deli Lights.
Yeah. He's Brian Reed, great guy. Yeah. And there's also another one that I'm chasing there. Well, listen, I don't want to give away my little secrets here.
There's a company that we actually work with up there. Well, they're a state body, and that's Waterways Ireland. So yes. They're cross-border.
Yes, they are.
And we work with some lovely people up there, but we have a fractional marketeer working with Waterways Ireland, and both north and south.
If you can do fractional with marketeers, you can do fractional with all creative sectors, presumably.
Well, it's happening already. Again, America is always great for these things, to where it happens first. But you have fractional CEOs, have fractional CTOs, because of the whole kind of demand that businesses have around technology.
CFOs as well.
CFOs, I know that exists, absolutely. Yeah. And there are a number of companies, I think, in the Irish market who are offering that type of service here. So it's happening. Because, look, let's face it, a lot of companies, when they start off, they are bootstrapping. They need expertise. The founders have brilliant expertise around their particular wheelhouse. And one of the areas that we're identifying now as an opportunity is to work with VCs who are putting money into companies with high potential to protect their investment. Because when it comes to marketing, if the marketing, and I'm not, again, talking about communications, I'm talking about identifying the strengths and weaknesses of the brand or the service, and also looking at the opportunity from a consumer or a business point of view, who's going to do that? And a lot of cases, a lot of HPSUs don't have that. So, you know, VCs sticking money into those companies, they need somebody who's going to act as the guardian of the kind of marketing strategy. And I think a fractional CMO could do that.
Well, you know that Enterprise Ireland, I think, are said to be Europe's biggest venture capital company. They invest in most companies around Europe. Surely they should be hiring you to do their audits on their HPSUs.
Well, watch the space.
It's, two stories.
We have a lovely connection in with Enterprise Ireland. We've done some work for one of their companies earlier in the year, and we're hopefully be knocking on that door soon.
And as I mentioned at the very beginning, is this all came as a bit of a surprise to you. Now, you've got a big background in business, I know that, but you've kind of landed on this business. This isn't your only business, of course.
No, it's not. No. I mean, well, it's 99% of what I do in an average week.
But it wasn't
week.
Meant to be.
It wasn't meant to be, no.
Because the other one that you're involved in, and we're not here to talk about it, but I want to talk about
sure,
it.
Sure, yeah.
Which is?
Vinyl. Vinyl records.
He doesn't wear vinyl.
Exactly, yeah. So Dublin Vinyl, yeah. I'm an investor in Dublin Vinyl from the early days when the company started off. Small investor, I have to say. There are some really big investors, thankfully, behind the company now. But two guys, Donal Malloy and Hugh Scully, set up the business, how long ago now? About 7 years ago. And set it up with one machine in Glasnevin, the only vinyl pressing plant. There was one before. It collapsed or closed down when vinyl was literally on its knees. And then there was the upsurge in vinyl again as younger record buyers, music fans began to buy vinyl to stick on their walls, not even to play. And the guys set up, they bought a machine from Canada. Probably better to let the guys tell their own story. But anyway, my version of it, they bought this machine from Canada from a company making new vinyl pressing machines over there, and have since then they've added eight more
and machines.
Eight machines, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and they're pressing by the new time up in Glasnevin. Can't reveal the location for safety and security reasons or anything else. They're working.
But I'm sure if you see a bunch of hippies walking around the place.
Exactly, storming the building. But they're pressing on behalf of a lot of the big record companies in Ireland. They have their own online music retail hub called the Record Hub, and it's performing really well. Yeah, performing really well. And I just looked at the charts earlier this morning and I see the number one record is a vinyl album. Taylor Swift for a start.
On vinyl.
On vinyl. And also Oasis Master Plan, which it must be about 8, 9, 10 years old at this stage. And then, of course, you have the Beatles single, which is at number 4 on the charts.
And that's been released on vinyl as well, yeah?
It is, yeah, yeah. So vinyl has really taken off, and, you know, the guys up in Glasnevin with big support also from Enterprise Ireland are literally going gangbusters on vinyl.
There's no chance that a CD will see the same kind of revival.
Well,
I've got about a million that I want to get rid of.
It hasn't gone away. Well, look, charity shops all over the country are still trying to get rid of them. But there are some magnificent packages being produced still by the record companies, packaging up kind of old, I suppose, outtakes of classic albums and so on, which they're releasing on CD, because they are, I suppose, more affordable in some cases than doing it the vinyl version. But vinyl has really taken off, and it's great to see, yeah.
Well, if somebody wants my package in a black plastic bag, they can have about 1,000 of things that nobody has ever heard of, yes, etc. Yeah, yeah. Do you know, I did send you the email, what my final question is, where I ask you...
Did I hear in a heartbeat?
Ah, he did read it.
I did. Well, there's two. I mean,
you may as many as you wish.
Really? Okay. Well, does the budget stretch to two?
Yeah. You may. Your budget, of course, is theoretical, so you can have anybody you want.
Well, we're obviously, you know, trying to scale the indie list, and, you know, there's myself and Una Hurley, my business partner, and also Amanda Murray, who works with us as our community manager. We've been lucky. We've had some really brilliant freelancers working with us on our tech side, but also on things like finance and legal. So we generally are freelancers insofar as we can. The area that I believe that we need or will need more help on is, that again, that whole area of tech and what's happening there. And I was trying to identify, if you had a wish list, if you had a genie in a bottle, who would you be able to hire? And there's a lady who I don't know, but again, I've kind of watched her progression largely through LinkedIn and through business media, called Michelle Concannon. And Michelle... she's a tech and machine learning expert, and she's over 20 years of experience working for companies like Cisco and Microsoft on their cloud and AI business. And this is before AI became a thing. She's now working, I won't name the company, but she's senior vice president of engineering with a US health services company based down in Galway. And I think we could do with somebody like Michelle helping us or advising us on our tech.
Do you know what I'd love?
Yeah.
I'd love Michelle. This is what I use it for. I find brilliant interviewees from people like you who've done all the research for me. Thank you. So if Michelle Concannon wants to come on, Concannon's a big West of Ireland name, of
it
course.
It sure is. Yeah. Yeah.
So if Michelle wants to join us on the business show, more than welcome.
Yeah.
And you have a second.
Second, and probably very unlikely that I'll get this particular individual to join the indie list, but even to have this individual on board as an advisor, it's a man called Scott Galloway, Professor Scott Galloway, to give him his full title. He's a professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business, and he comes from Scotland originally, with a name like Galloway, as you can imagine. He does a weekly newsletter called No Mercy, No Malice, and he also, like yourself, does some brilliant podcasting called the Pivot Podcast.
Oh, we like a good pivot.
Pivot Podcast, yeah. Not fond of the word now myself, but anyway, he does brilliant. And he also does, as I say, great newsletter every week. Comments on politics, tech, and media, always backed up with data. So he gives his own personal opinion, but always backed up with fact. And he's just one of those amazing individuals who just has a lovely twist on insight and advice around business and strategy and so on. And if we could get Scott now to rock up for the odd meeting, we'd happily supply him with Guinness and...
and some vinyl records.
And some vinyl records, indeed.
Yeah. I love those kind of people where you can actually almost smell the brains.
Absolutely,
you can just say, oh, Jesus.
Well, interestingly, Scott was the one, and we've heard about WeWork situation in the last week. He was the one that kind of saw the writing on the wall 5 years ago. He said there's something iffy about the WeWork buyout structure, the whole lot, and he called it out at the time. Yeah.
And unfortunately, he was correct, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. He also has an interesting, he has a Prof G, as in Professor Galloway, a bot, an AI bot. You can ask it questions and it tells you all of what you need to know about strategy. I probably shouldn't be telling you that on this podcast. People won't hear the indie list, but anyway.
One of those, the answers might be, to use the Dublin expression, to go and pivot. That is fantastic, Peter. Yeah. Peter McPartland, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Conal, thank you very much. Lovely to be here. Thanks again.
That Great Business Show. DeFacto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. DeFacto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. DeFacto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
Are you buying or selling a home? If it's for sale, it's on daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website.
Travel to Connecticut, USA with Aer Lingus service to Bradley International Airport. With the daily flights from Dublin to Hartford, we make business travel to Connecticut easy. Save time with US pre-clearance, enjoy Aer Lingus award-winning flight service, and experience the convenience of Bradley International Airport, perfectly situated for your travel needs. Learn more and plan your next business trip at aerlingus.com.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
It's one of our well-worn cliches that those in business like to help others in business as long as they're not eating their lunch. There's a 10-year-old international organization with bases in London and New York called simply Digital Irish. It's a non-profit, so members are just good people, and they claim a membership of 5,000, and that's a lot of good people. They want to provide a so-called soft landing for Irish startups expanding into either the UK or the US markets. It's what we're trying to do as well in our own little way with our Beachhead USA interviews. Check them all out. Digital Irish's founder is Fergal Kenny, who also has a day job heading up a New York boutique executive search firm called Glenborn Corporation, specializing in senior sales jobs, mostly in e-commerce and digital marketing. Fergal Kenny, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you for having me, Colin.
Digital Irish, fabulous organization. Tell all.
Well, as you said, we've been around about 10 years. Our goal is to promote Irish startups and Irish innovators in the US and UK markets.
5,000 members, that's big.
Yeah, we've had a lot of engagement. We do events every month from September through to June in both New York and London. And over that period of time, we've had about 220 Irish startups participate and pitch us on what they do. And then we try and make connections for them.
And we'll get on to all of that because that is so good and so useful and so important. But why do you do it?
I do it for the fun. I mean, I really enjoy making connections, just understanding what a company does and thinking who in my network would be interested in hearing more about this. I think being Irish, you typically root for the underdogs. Startups are by definition underdogs. They need a helping hand. And I think it's a great way to just to keep a tie with home.
But it also takes up your time.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, it's complementary to my day job, but yeah, it does take up time, but it's not really time that I notice using up. Because it is fun. It is fun making the connections, and it's not just me. We now have a board of eight or so here in New York, and the same again in London. So there's a lot of people to spread the load with.
And what you are doing is you're welcoming anybody in the startup sector, and you're trying to put your arm around them and bring them across the line.
Yeah, I wouldn't say anybody. I mean, we want to make sure they're ready to sort of like seriously look at the states. So they
but
need
I presume that they're EI approved. So therefore, they've done a certain amount of being checked out.
Yeah, I mean, there's an element of that. So we do a lot of like joint events and joint work with Enterprise Ireland. And we're very complimentary to Enterprise Ireland. But, you know, the actual startups come in from a few different sources, right? I mean, in terms of like referrals, sometimes it's VCs, sometimes it's direct connections, and sometimes it's EI. And yes, coincidentally, a lot of them are EI clients.
And when you're looking at those that you hope will win, do you actually turn a few away from the door?
No one really gets turned away from the door. I mean, the pre-qualifier is that you are ready to expand in the States. And then we sort of like, then we're happy to make the introductions.
And how do you measure that ready for the States?
Well, it's a whole bunch of different factors. I mean, it's like, are they capitalized enough? Are they seriously thinking about setting up a beachhead over here? And do they have the ambition?
How do you measure ambition? How much capital do they need? Answer all of the questions.
Oh, well, that's hard. So this is the classic difference between sort of like the Irish attitude and the US attitude. Most of our clients in the recruiting space are US based. They're generally either New York or Silicon Valley based.
This is in your business.
In my day job as a recruiter, the American attitude is sort of go big, go home. To use the American sports terminology, it's swing for the fences from a baseball perspective, right? And they
swing
typically
for the fences. Does that mean that you beat them?
You're literally trying to hit a home run as opposed to just hitting sort of like a single or a double, right? It's where I knew a lot about baseball, which I don't, right? So don't want to mislead anyone on your podcast. But yeah, American firms will typically raise a lot of money with the aim of getting the momentum to get to the next phase, which is generally the next round of capital. So they will typically sort of like invest, they will pay for sort of like senior leadership, bring in the individual contributors under them. Whereas sometimes the attitude with Irish, and it's not just Irish, it's UK, it's Israeli startups as well that we see a lot of, is hire to sort of the lowest common denominator, get the cheapest person we can get away with, raise the minimum amount of money so we don't give away enough of the company. And it's just a difference in ambition, right? So, I mean, you asked about like, you know, what's the minimum baseline to come into the States? That's hard to measure, right? But like if it could be a founder doing it on their own dime who moves over here. I mean, there's enough ambition in that. They don't necessarily have to raise a lot of money to do that, especially if it's a business that's cash flow positive. But typically, if you're to hire someone on the ground here without moving a founder over here and they're just to sell for you, and let's say you're an enterprise B2B company, you got to factor that a US-based enterprise sales hire these days is going to cost you $150K base, $300K on target earnings, add 10 to 15% on top of that for benefits and employer taxes. So that's effectively 300 grand. That's just for one person. You get nothing else with that. They'll probably want a sales development rep to set up appointments for them. So you're sort of like, you need to think, if you're thinking seriously about expanding to the States, you probably need to think about at least $1 million allocated to that effort alone.
For 1 year.
For 1 year, assuming you're hiring sort of like 2 to 3 people in that first year.
And you're not going to break it in a year, are you?
No, definitely not. No, like, I mean,
people are beginning to cry now.
No, well, the whole intention is to make people cry a little bit so they think, okay, this is why people in the States raise so much money to get to the next level. I mean, there's all sorts of overhead you have to build into your raises.
We're encouraging people to go to Connecticut because New York is so expensive. I mean, it's nuts, isn't it?
It is a little nuts, all right? But here you have access to serious talent. I don't want to take away from Connecticut. I mean, Connecticut is a tri-state area. It's really close to New York. It's commutable distance to New York, as is New Jersey, Long Island, right? There's a lot of activity here. You can get a lot done in a day. Doesn't mean you can't do it. I mean, you come in on the train from Connecticut, right? But it is expensive, but this, you know, that's the nature of the beast. If you want to play big, you know, this is what it costs to work in this market.
And we have now raised enough capital, we probably need $2 million. But that other one, the it factor, the ambition, how do you sniff that out?
That's really hard to tell. I mean, like, as part of Digital Irish, we have startups do fast pitches, right? We've done that from the start. We've done that for the last 10 years. And we also have a separate group called Digital Irish Angels. So that's an angel group that I set up with David Beatty, who also runs Gangels, right, which is an LGBTQ affinity.
That I hope to have on the podcast when we can catch him.
Okay, he's a difficult man to catch. They're very busy, did a lot of deals last year. But there we see people actually pitch for funds. And it's really difficult to put your finger on that. But just the it factor is sort of, it's more of a function of confidence and a recognition. I mean, it's also credibility, right? Knowing your industry, knowing your space. But the confidence that you see in Americans when they say, like, I'm going to do this, and you're just bought in hook, line, and sinker.
But you know what I'm thinking when you say that American thing of, I'm going to do this. Sometimes it's absolute bull.
No question, right? There's no question about that. But it's also about the story, right? I mean, so we did this Irish Startup Week event last week, right? We had 20 firms come in. We sort of indoctrinated them on doing business in the States. So we covered all sorts of topics like legal, HR, selling in the US, product market positioning in the US. But one of the sessions we did was with an Irish guy called Owen Fitzpatrick, who sort of is a corporate trainer, and he covers a lot of topics, but one of them is the art of storytelling. And
we should be okay at that.
Yeah, we're not too shabby at that generally, right? But that's where you get across the ambition. And people want to hear the story, right? They want to hear, you know, the personalized component, right? Why is this like important to you? They want to hear, I'm parroting what Owen said last week, right?
Not too late.
But they also want to hear sort of like about how you're going to, you know, the pain that you're, that you're trying to resolve and how you resolve it. So it's this like highs and lows of dopamine and I think it's cortisol, right? This is what you're dealing with, right? Within the body. And just being able to sort of articulate that, but also tie it back to sort of like the practicalities of being able to execute on, you know, at a business level.
Where do we, and when I say that, I mean, Irish entrepreneurs fool ourselves when heading stateside?
In terms of fooling ourselves, I mean, it's more thinking that you can do it on a small scale. I think this isn't unique to Irish firms, but you have to be on the ground. You have to work on the ground to see how big business gets done over here. I mean, I spent 15 years in sales management before I got into recruiting. And the market is just so big, so deep. It can service, like, you can have a very big business serving a really, really small niche in the bigger scheme of things that you just couldn't possibly achieve. Like in the recruiting space, as an example, right? I'll get asked by my clients I want someone who knows how to sell personalization technology, right, to retailers and knows how to target this persona within a certain amount of retailers. And I also want them to have a relationship with Sephora or Walmart. And it gets that specific. And I'll be sure. And we'll find a pool of candidates that has exactly that experience.
And they obviously will pay for that, which obviously gives you bread and butter. And similarly, what you're trying to say is that you can, within, say, an Irish context, a company going over, they can actually drill down, but make a tidy living.
No question about it. But a VC is not looking for you to make a tidy living if you are VC-backed.
I shouldn't have used that.
They're looking for you to have $1 billion
exit. That's an Irish understatement, sorry. Yeah. Because, explain that. Is that they not interested in 100,000, not
at all.
A million, not in 10 million. You've got to say the billion word.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be significant for them. I mean, you know, the type of metrics that they're going on is probably sort of like 1 in 8 of their firms is what they need to be sort of like the rock star. They're not looking for sort of like a middling exit. They're not looking to get their money back, right? They're looking to sort of like get at least 10 times what they put into it.
Other issues that Irish people don't think about when they're heading over here? You mentioned legals, for example. Is that, you know, do we get...
Yeah, certainly a legal baseline. I mean, like, let's just talk about, you know, brass tacks, right? I mean, sort of like, firstly, making sure that if you're going to come here and do business, making sure that you're clean from an immigration perspective, right?
They don't like illegals.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's lots of people who'd advise you on this. I'm no lawyer, right? But let's say if you come over on a holiday visa and you've got commercial samples in your bag and you answer the immigration official wrongly in Dublin Airport, you may never get back into the States again or not.
I brought you over de facto shaving oil and I wasn't queried about that.
I was wondering, I sort of saw that and wondered if it was a hint that I hadn't shaved properly this morning. It was there.
It's our lovely Tom Murphy, who is looking for distributors in the US for his product.
Okay.
So back to this again, the legals, anything else to watch out for?
I mean, it is a litigious society, right? So you got to be careful. I mean, you got to be careful from for hiring, right? I mean, just like that you ask the right questions. I think it's an at-will employment environment as well. So loyalty.
Now explain that, because it really is. I'm somewhat taken aback sometimes still.
Yeah.
But just, you're out. There's no discussion.
Yeah, there's no, I mean, when you sign a contract here, like you sign your employment letter, it clearly states, it says, like, yeah, we're delighted to have you on board, but recognize this is an at-will arrangement. It's in every offer letter. So the reality is you can leave and they can have you leave at will. Now, it's not totally as simple as that. If you're sort of in certain classes of employees as an employer, they want to cover themselves. So let's say if you're older or you're diverse, right? They may want to sort of like put you on in sales. Let's say they'll put you on a performance improvement plan. But basically, it's a very flexible labor market. But the reason why that's important, let's say Irish companies coming over here, is you might find a rock star who performs really well for you. And something happens and they decide, boom. And they're gone, right? They no 2 weeks notice. They might give you 2 weeks notice, but they may just stop working.
Does that happen often?
It does happen.
Okay. So like Monday they're there, Tuesday they're not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. So it happens. And like, I think the expectation sometimes with foreign firms is when they make a hire, and generally there is a commitment. I don't want to sound, people aren't that flippant over here, right? They take their job seriously. But you can have a situation where you think you're all set up and you've put a lot of effort and time into sort of getting someone trained up. And then 6 months later, they're gone. And you're sort of like trying to sort of like you're reeling and trying to sort of get back and replace that person. And you may lose 6 months in the process. And that's where it gets really expensive. So that's where, you know, I talk about, you know, millions of dollars that you need to come in here. Right? I mean, forget about like the fact that you may need to do multiple attempts at your product to find product market fit. So you're going to need extra money for that. But you need a lot of extra money to sort of like to diversify on the employee front as well.
And those are some of the problems and only some of the problems. And if anybody needs to know more, they should actually go and join Digital Irish. I presume you take as a member. Anybody? Do you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we have a low threshold in terms of like we don't charge for membership. We actually we're about to launch a directory as well. So we think it's like what we do at a baseline is we make connections for people, right? So it's a grassroots organization and we love making connections that are impactful to your business, right? It could be investors, it could be customers, it could be partners, right? But oftentimes that has boiled down to sort of the board members being sort of the bottleneck, right, in the process, right? So I know someone, I hear your pitch, I directly connect you to that, you know, to that person who's relevant for you. We want to make that more scalable. So we've built a directory that allows you to see people with Irish affinity so that you're not reinventing the wheel all the time.
And have you any little one or even two little tips people just don't realize or forget about?
I mean, just being direct, like, I think follow-up is key, right? Maybe this is more of a trait. We also, you know, help out some J1 grad students who come over here who are looking for jobs. They've got this slightly awkward visa that only lasts a year. But oftentimes you try and help them out and you give them direction. It's like, you need to reach out to these people. And it's the lack of follow-up. It's like, you know, and I think it's partially they feel like they might be intruding, but it's being direct, right? Yeah. Operating at a sort of like a New York speed where you're compressing the timelines, right? So here's a person you should meet to try and get a job, right? So I meet you on a Tuesday, right? You should be following up with me on a Tuesday evening to say, can you make that introduction for me? And you should be compressing the timelines to get that meeting as quickly as you possibly can. That's the way you got to work over here. You know, it's everything is sort of like compressed timelines and speed and follow-up.
That's a very useful tip. You better talk to us about your business because you've been so kind to give us your time, your intellect, and your contacts.
Sure. So I run a company called Glenbourne. So Glenbourne is a boutique search firm. We focus on the sales function. So everything that reports up to a chief revenue officer. We go from senior individual contributors all the way up to the chief revenue officer. It's all SaaS firms, so B2B SaaS firms. It's sort of like three categories of SaaS firms. We do a lot of functional specific SaaS. So sales, marketing, CX. These days, things like ESG procurement are actually getting hotter. We do a lot of vertical specific SaaS plays. So companies that are very focused on specific verticals like retail, CPG, sometimes, you know, more niche ones like utilities. And then we do some horizontal SaaS and horizontal, that those are sort of like the hot new areas. So these days, the action is around AI, machine learning, natural language processing, big data. Then there's other categories like low code, no code. Yeah, those would be some of the hot spaces.
I can tell you one thing. I shan't be applying because I don't even know what most of those jobs
okay.
are.
Okay. Well, in a nutshell, so like in, like just to break it down a little bit more, but let's say e-commerce companies, right? There's a lot of big retailers in the States, but there's also a lot of sort of venture money that goes into technology firms that power a component of a retailer's site. So when those companies raise money, they come to us and we find them their sales team, their sales leaders to target retailers. So
that makes sense. Yeah, a lot
that's
of
what
sense.
We do.
Yeah, good.
So,
and you've been at it a while.
Yeah, I've been doing that for about 12 years. So we have four other recruiters working with me here in the States. We have a crew in the Philippines. We use a lot of tech in our process. And we're all ex-sellers. So we also spent years selling SaaS solutions in the US market. And it's helpful to have come from sales,
of course,
when you recruit for sales, because it's the one area where subjectivity is really important. So there's lots of great salespeople out there, but they come in all different shapes and sizes. And, you know, having worked in teams that were quite diverse, you'd be surprised who the most effective people were sometimes, not the ones you'd expect from, you know, from looking at them, right? I mean, sometimes the most effective salespeople were just not what you would expect that, you know, to be.
Final question to you. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
So I'm going to turn that around a little bit and sort of, because I obviously hire on other people's behalf.
Okay, you're allowed that one.
Yeah, and maybe we'll sort of like take a little bit of an Irish twist on it as well, right? Because we touched on the it factor, right? I mean, so generally in the sales recruitment space, we're given very, very distinct marching orders, right? We have less creative license than you would think. And if I had creative license, yes, I'm trying to find people who meet the spec, but I'm also looking for the it factor. And that's something that you can tell by sort of just the cadence of the conversation. Like it's hard to define, but you see it in salespeople, in sales leaders. Let's say if we sort of apply that to the entrepreneur factor, I'll give you maybe a couple of examples of like when we've heard pitches from entrepreneurs where I'm like, wow, these people have the it factor. Someone like Pat Phelan from Sisu, who I'm sure a lot of your listeners know.
Yes, I have interviewed him.
Last week, we heard from Oisin Hanrahan, who's ex-Handy and Angie, who's based here. He's just, you know, a phenomenal speaker and just like you're just immediately compelled. And even last Friday, we had Alice Delahunt from Psyche, she's the ex-chief digital officer of Polar Alpha Moran. But folks like that, all Irish, all have an it factor and just, you know, they're just compelling characters. And, you know, if I had a role to fill for a client or if I was doing it for myself, I'd be like, you know, if I had the creative license, the artistic license, I'd be like, yeah, get those types of folks on board because they'll figure out a way to make it happen.
Fascinating. And thank you so much. Fergal Kenny, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
If it's for sale, it's on daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. Whether you're looking for your first home or planning your next move, make sure you're on daft.ie. The best place to buy or sell in Ireland.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com.
That Great Business Show.
And that's it from That Great Business Show, episode 166. Great business insights and inspiration, all thanks to our lovely sponsor, daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. And if you're looking for your first home, or maybe you're looking to upsize or downsize, make sure you visit daft.ie to find that next place you call home. Sign up for email updates and we'll send you your own personal copy of the podcast. And you can sign up at thatgreatbusinessshow.com. Share us and like us as well. And why not advertise with us on That Great Business Show to engage with our incredible audience of entrepreneurs, businesses and investors. We record at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where today's studio engineer is Alison O'Dwyer. And later, the dynamic duo, studio manager Peter Rice and post-production engineer Neil Horner, ensure we remain the world's best-sounding business podcast. So for me, Conal Moran, Buíochas to you all, and Gislán Tamil.